Surprised, he asked Ursula if all that was true, and she answered him that it was, that many years ago the gypsies had brought magic lamps and flying mats to Macondo. "What's happening," she sighed, "is that the world is slowly coming to an end, and those things don't come here anymore." When he finished the book, in which many of the stories had no endings because there were pages missing, Aureliano Segundo set about deciphering the manuscripts. It was impossible. The letters looked like clothes hung out to dry on a line, and they looked more like musical notation than writing. One hot noontime, while he was poring over the manuscripts, he sensed that he was not alone in the room. Against the light from the window, sitting with his hands on his knees, was Melquiades. He was under 40 years of age. He was wearing the same old-fashioned vest and the hat that looked like a raven's wings, and across his pale temples there flowed the grease from his hair that had been melted by the heat, just as Aureliano and José Arcadio had seen him when they were children. Aureliano Segundo recognized him at once, because that hereditary memory had been transmitted from generation to generation and had come to him through the memory of his grandfather. "Hello," Aureliano Segundo said.
"Hello, young man," said Melquiades.
From then on, for several years, they saw each other almost every afternoon. Melquiades talked to him about the world, tried to infuse him with his old wisdom, but he refused to translate the manuscripts. "No one must know their meaning until he has reached 100 years of age," he explained. Aureliano kept those meetings secret forever. On one occasion, he felt that his private world had fallen apart because Ursula came in when Melquiades was in the room. But she did not see him.
"Who are you talking to?" she asked him.
"Nobody," Aureliano Segundo said. "That's what your great-grandfather did," Ursula said. "He used to talk to himself, too." José Arcadio Segundo, in the meantime, had satisfied his wish to see a shooting. For the rest of his life he would remember the livid flash of the six simultaneous shots and the echo of the discharge as it broke against the hills, and the sad smile and perplexed eyes of the man being shot, who stood erect while his shirt became soaked with blood, and who was still smiling even when they untied him from the post and put him in a box filled with quicklime. "He's alive," he thought. "They're going to bury him alive." It made such an impression on him that from then on he detested military practices and war, not because of the executions, but because of the horrifying custom of burying the victims alive. No one knew then exactly when he began to ring the bells in the church tower and assist Father Antonio Isabel, the successor to the Pup, at Mass, and take care of the fighting cocks in the courtyard of the parish house. When Colonel Gerineldo Marquez found out, he scolded him strongly for learning occupations repudiated by the liberals. "The fact is," he answered, "I think I've turned out to be a conservative." He believed it as if it had been determined by fate. Colonel Gerineldo Marquez, scandalized, told Ursula about it. "It's better that way," she approved. "Let's hope that he becomes a priest so that God will finally come into this house." It was soon discovered that Father Antonio Isabel was preparing him for his first communion. He was teaching him the catechism as he shaved the necks of his roosters. He explained to him with simple examples, as he put the brooding hens into their nests, how it had occurred to God on the second day of creation that chickens would be formed inside of an egg. From that time on, the parish priest began to show the signs of senility that would lead him to say years later that the devil had probably won his rebellion against God, and that he was the one who sat on the heavenly throne, without revealing his true identity in order to trap the unwary. Warmed up by the persistence of his mentor, in a few months, José Arcadio Segundo came to be as adept in theological tricks used to confuse the devil as he was skilled in the tricks of the cockpit. Amaranta made him a linen suit with a collar and tie, bought him a pair of white shoes, and engraved his name in gilt letters on the ribbon of the candle. Two nights before the first communion, Father Antonio Isabel closeted himself with him in the sacristy to hear his confession with the help of a dictionary of sins. It was such a long list that the aged priest, used to going to bed at 6 o'clock, fell asleep in his chair before it was over. The interrogation was a revelation for José Arcadio II. It did not surprise him that the priest asked him if he had done bad things with women, and he honestly answered no, but he was upset with the question as to whether he had done them with animals. The first Friday in May he received communion, tortured by curiosity. Later on he asked Petronio, the sickly sexton who lived in the belfry and who, according to what they said, fed himself on bats, about it, and Petronio answered him, "There are some corrupt Christians who do their business with female donkeys."